It's Monday, March 18th, and we have Julia Child, Patrick O'Connell, David Shannon, and an interview with Rachel DeYoung of Cuckoo Rachel. I'm already full, Scott. Welcome to Eat It, Virginia.
Before social media influencers or the Food Network, there was a national icon who changed the way we cook at home. Julia Child, America's original celebrity chef. Learn how she inspired generations of foodies and home cooks in a limited-time major national exhibition at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture. Julia Child, A Recipe for Life, on display March 16th through September 2nd at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture in Richmond. Learn more and get tickets at virginiahistory.org. virginiahistory.org.
Hello and welcome to Eat It Virginia, your number one podcast source for food news and interviews with the people who make Virginia restaurants great. Follow us on social media at Eat It Virginia and be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. My name is Scott Wise and I'm joined as always by my friend, Roby Martin. Roby, the people have spoken.
They have?
So when 2023,
who the hell are these people?
When 2023 flipped to 2024, I had the great idea of truncating our podcast a little bit to just focus on interviews and then taking all of our witty and very entertaining banter over to social media. Well, our first podcast came out earlier this year, and while I heard some good things about the podcast in general and our interview skills, the thing I heard most was, we miss the Roby and Scott banter. I heard it from multiple people. So I'm honored, but at the same time,
I just like hearing what you have to say. I think it's awesome.
All right. So even though we made this proclamation not just 2 weeks ago about the podcast, this is what we're going to do. I'm making a command decision.
We're going to do both.
My grand plan to lessen my workload has now doubled my workload. Hallelujah. I do this for the people, well, though, Roby. I do it for the people. Hopefully the people appreciate it.
I love it. Anything that has to do with more food on in, you know that.
As long as we're on the same page.
We're on the same page.
This particular podcast, we want to say up front, has a sponsorship tied to it. The Virginia Museum of History and Culture and their new exhibit featuring Julia Child, all about Julia Child. They came to us and asked if we'd be interested in diving into the exhibit a little bit and interviewing some of the people involved. So, of course, it matches with our mission of food.
Could you not want to be sponsored by Julia Child? I mean, how can you not want to be? And literally no brainer. Yes, I would love to be sponsored by Julia and Josh. Yes.
Do you have a particular Julia Child memory from growing up?
No, I have all 100%, I think, of everything that has come out regarding cookbooks for Julia. I've watched every single episode of the new Julia, the old Julia, the Julia and Julia movie. I mean, I think it's awesome. I have tried and tried and tried to make a good French omelet, which she feels like, I don't know, like it's like the first thing she did on, I think it was WGBN, for her to be able to get the television show that she, most people are super familiar, which kind of launched her into the culinary scene. Probably her complete unabashed, like just laissez-faire take on making mistakes directly in front of a large audience is like a huge, huge takeaway for me. But she was just like, well, I guess I screwed up and then went on with it.
I think that's her huge inspiration on this podcast, really. I mean, that's kind of like what we've been doing since day one. So it's perfect.
Yeah.
The exhibit, the Julia Child exhibit, runs now through the beginning of September at the museum, which is on Arthur Ashe Boulevard in Richmond. We encourage everyone to check it out as part of the exhibit.
And take a picture in the bathtub. So people can... Oh, I'm screaming at Scott and he hates it when I do that.
Take a picture in the bathtub. Rachel DeYoung, who we have on a little later in this podcast, is one of the Virginia Bakers, who is featured in the exhibit. So you'll hear her story in a couple minutes, and you can go read more about her at the exhibit. So,
how cool. So cool. And if you haven't been to the bakery in Charlottesville, you should really get by there. It's just a delight to have such well-baked French fare. So cool.
We had a very special night the other night, Roby, and I want you to explain to the folks at home what exactly we were able to experience.
So in an insane shower of fortunate, that's all I can say, we got invited to sit at a very small table with Patrick O'Connell of the Inn at Little Washington, Bonnie, the general manager, and several really great food writers at La Possible, with David Shannon cooking for Patrick O'Connell as an inspiration from Julia Child. So it was supposed to be three courses, but as you know, David Shannon does not do anything that's not distinctly detailed, delicate, and just helps so good. So it ended up being five courses of just amazing food. God has the menu, which David Shannon made. I don't even know how he does these things. Like, I have really no words for how emotional that whole night was. What did you think?
The word that came to mind, I was trying to kind of live in the moment during the actual meal, but the word that comes to mind afterwards is grateful. Just grateful to be at that table with those people eating that food. For longtime listeners of the podcast, or maybe you figured it out if this is your first time listening, I'm not a foodie. Like, I enjoy a good meal, but I really enjoy the atmosphere and the environment in which that meal is made. So whether it's a really fancy dinner or whether it's a very plain dinner, the vibe and the people and the things that aren't necessarily coming out of the kitchen sometimes really make it for me. And this meal was a beautiful combination of some of the most incredible food I've ever eaten, with all the atmosphere, the music, the flowers that were behind me. David coming out and explaining his love for Patrick and his love for Julia, and he shared a family story with us about how Julia inspired him as a young child. The toast that Patrick gave. I mean, it's over emotion. If grateful is the first word that comes to mind, overwhelming is probably the second word that comes to mind, because it was all overwhelming.
Well, I looked at the pictures when I got home and was like, oh, I'm not crying. Just because, just like a collision of everything I love. Because if you listen to this podcast for a while, you know that I'm deep into food. And that was just like maybe one of the top experiences. So there's that.
I didn't mean to make you cry. I know this to be. Let's talk about this.
You have yet to make me cry, but I'll tell you that night is just fake.
All right. Let's take a break. Oh, gosh. I love it. See, that's what I'm talking about. It's incredible. It's the emotion of the evening. Like, it's not just the food coming out of the kitchen. It's this confluence of people and food and flavors. And it was all just a very beautiful night, and super appreciative and grateful. Speaking of food, you had the first issue of the new hard copy style came out that you're a big part of.
Cosby Table. Yeah, the Cosby Table mag. Yeah, I'm really, really, really excited about that. I think that, I'm all over the issue, which is really cool. You read about tacos. I read about the best new restaurant in Richmond, and probably my most, I'm just so proud of this crab article, Scott. I can't stop talking about how proud I am, and I wrote it, which makes me feel like a little bit self-centered. But all of these men and women do the crabbing up and down our East Coast, like soft shell. Crabbing too, but really my focus is on soft shell crabs. They just are, we're going to lose that heritage if we don't keep talking about it and discussing that marine resources and the water commission and how they can help them, continue the hard work. We won't have one of my favorite foods, which is soft-shell crabs. So yeah, the issue's really neat. If you haven't picked it up, do it, because it's It has Megan Markaniak talking about savory cocktails. It has Deb Freeman discussing what some of the first foods were here in Virginia, along with Black winemakers, which is really, really awesome. And then it has your buddy in it.
Hi, buddy.
Bo. Yeah, oh. Bo is one of the best new restaurants. So those are just some highlights that you can read, but the whole issue is really, really cool.
Do you recall some of the other restaurants on the new restaurant list besides Odyssey?
Other than Bo? Well, yeah. I mean, there's like nine of them, and I rolled about five, six. I don't know. But yeah, Sincero is on there. Wishbone, I didn't write that one, but they're on there. Revel, if you've not been out to that restaurant on Lakeside, you really should. That's Amy Cabdis's restaurant. She owned Julep, and then they also owned Cobbles for some time. It was off of Brad Street. Like, it's just it's a cool, cool list.
So for those of you just catching up, Style was a long time free publication in Richmond, covered arts, covered music, covered restaurants, like an alt weekly, I guess you could call it. And then it's sort of went away for a time and then just went online only for a time. And now with this issue that Roby's talking about, it is now back quarterly in like a large coffee table version. And online every day, different articles every day. So check it out. Check out Roby's writing. Let her know what you think about it. Roby loves the feedback. So
I do. All of it. Good, bad, and different. Feedback. And really cannot express how excited I am about the soft shell crab article. Well, if you only read one thing, I'll just pat myself on the back. It took a really long time to write. Please read about Mickey and Joey. I mean, they've been doing soft shell crabbing for Mickey and his father. Mickey's been doing it for 50 years. His father's been doing it for 70. Mickey is 70. His father is 90. And they still soft shell crab and sing. Crazy.
I'm looking forward to reading that. Thank you for sharing, Roby. Any other restaurant news we want to get to before we talk to Rachel about Julia Child and her Charlottesville bakery?
Trying to decide. Richmond, the RVA collab was opened, which is four chefs, which is really neat. Tammy Brawley from the Green Kitchen, along with like three other great women chefs, have opened RVA Food Collab, which is, I don't know if it's like a grocery store, but it's going to have some fun stuff that you can pick up over at Stony Point, so on Stony Point Parkway. Like, you can get over there and check that. What else has opened? I believe the new ML Steak has opened in Chesterfield, which makes the 300th opening for Mike Woolsey and LFG, which is kind of neat. I think that they're just doing some really cool stuff. What else?
I saw a headline, I believe it was on Richmond Biz Sense, about Southern Kitchen moving from Jackson Ward to Stony Point Fashion Park. I know you're very intimately familiar with Stony Point Fashion Park. And we loved our interview with Shane, the owner of Southern Kitchen. Oh, gosh, that was a couple of years ago now. But Shane was always, you know, an inspirational leader over there in Jackson Ward. Do you have any initial thoughts about that?
I think it's great. If they keep bringing food over to Stony Point, I think people will start to make it over there more. And that's a wonderful restaurant to bring over there. I think that it's been a big embryo is a huge space. I mean, like, the bar is really cool. I remember having happy hour there when I first started looking hourly at Anthro. So I think it'll be fun. And good vibe.
We'll have to get Shane back on the podcast to talk about the move and what prompted it. How excited she is, because she's always she's very, very excitable person. So
she is. And I love that about her. It makes me happy.
Any time spent with Shane is a good time.
Yes. Yes. For sure. Anyway, Rachel, up next, talking about how to bake at 4 a.m. I learned some things. Did you?
Always learning things.
God, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a really, really pathetic baker. Well, when I was in Charlottesville the last time, I made sure to go by this bakery. Eileen Mellon, who is a food editor at Richmond Magazine, is a really big fan. I'm just stunned that someone can do, Rachel, what you are doing. I'm excited to have Rachel DeYoung with us on the podcast, because she's going to tell me how to bake.
No pressure, Rachel. No pressure at all.
Excellent. ready for it.
What is the one piece of advice you would share with a young aspiring baker?
Oh, wow. Baking, for me, patience was the first thing that popped in my head.
Patience. All right.
So lots of patience. Yeah.
How did you get to baking?
Oh, boy. Excellent question. And certainly a lot of influences, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But the biggest one, I think, was that I'm one of five children. And so food was around a lot. You know, when you're feeding seven people in the house, it was just sort of, I was always in the kitchen. I was always watching my mom. But I had a huge sweet tooth. And of course, all my brothers always wanted cookies around or something like this. And my mom, you know, preferred to do the cooking. Baking was not quite her day. So I just sort of assumed the role and started baking all the time, cookies, brownies. Started with, you know, box mixes or whatever. And then you start going, wait, I think I could do this. And recipes, started collecting recipes and talking to my grandmother. And, you know, you just kind of go from there.
Where does the Rachel DeYoung story begin? Are you from Virginia?
I am actually. I came back to my hometown. So I never thought I would, but I did grow up in Charlottesville, Virginia. Yeah.
And so what are your memories from Charlottesville in terms of the dining and in seeing back when you were growing up? Are any of those places still around that you remember as from childhood?
They are. You know, Charlottesville's wonderful and there's a wonderful food community. I will say, with such a big family, we didn't eat out very much. And, you know, going to bakeries was not something that we did frequently, which is why I was doing it at home so much. But yeah, I mean, gosh, Dooner's restaurant comes to mind.
So growing up in Charlottesville, did you study at UVA?
Yeah, I for some reason, UVA was never on my list of views, but I did go to James Madison in Harrisonburg for a year and a half. And I'd already kind of decided I wanted to be a baker. I didn't have much professional experience, but got to JMU and ultimately decided that big university lifestyle was not my cup of tea. So I moved on from that and I found a job back in Charlottesville at a bakery called Baker's Palette. It's no longer here, unfortunately, but Sheila, the owner there, kind of took me under her wing and I was working there a little over 1 year. And then that's when I decided to go to culinary school in Paris at Le Cordon Bleu.
Nice upgrade for you. You know, let's just go to Paris.
Yeah.
What was that conversation like with your family?
It was funny. I mean, I think that, you know, going back to the whole five kids thing, college and money, those conversations are always pretty intense. But my parents, who are also both artists, they had a really fun take on everything, kind of starting your career. So I remember I was reading a book about a gal who went to Le Cordon Bleu. And one day I was just sort of talk about it like, oh man, wouldn't that be incredible, like what a life. And my mom was like, yeah, do that. I was like, wait, what, really? So you know, they were really encouraging in that way of sky's the limit sort of vibe if it's what you love.
What were your first moments like when you landed? Had you been to Europe before? Had you traveled extensively at that point in your life?
No, I was 20, very green, hadn't really left Virginia. Yeah, I remember his first 24 hours vividly. So I was terrified. And Le Cordon Bleu is not, they're welcoming, but they're, you know, French chefs. So it was a very steep learning curve in a number of ways. Yeah.
What's that like?
Yeah, it was, I'm trying to remember. I was terrified. It actually reminds me of one of the first times I went skiing, where I was terrified and just sort of like went for it and didn't really, like, you just sort of back out at a certain point and just kind of going with the motions, following people around you, lurking for cues from the chefs. But no, you do, you know, I think that the people talk about this sometimes, but kitchen life is a universal. So I was able to pick up on cues from the chefs and watch their movements. We had lectures and then we go in the kitchen ourselves and make that
that recipe or a few of the recipes. And so, you know, I was looking back the other day at some of my notes from those times. I mean, I just took intensive notes. And there were maybe one or two other students in the class that spoke English, and you would kind of help each other out. But yeah, it's a lot of just trusting your instincts. I don't know. I don't even know how to explain how I did it. I don't know what I would do today, but.
So pardon my ignorance, but when you go to this cooking school, is it just a focus on baking, or do you learn everything?
There are options. So I went just with pastry, but you do have the option of cooking, or you could do both. I think looking back, I wish I had done both, but all in all, having that intensive look at pastry and bread was really nice.
And so you graduate, I assume, from the cooking school, and then you come straight back to the States after that?
I did. I wish I could have stayed, but I was very broke. And, you know, most of those initial internships out of school are unpaid. So I was like, well, I guess my option is the U.S. So, yeah, I came back here to Charlottesville, and Sheila at Baker's Palette kind of, you know, had a space for me for a few months, which I was really appreciative of. And then started working at a chocolate shop here in Charlottesville, Gerhardt's, which is still in existence. And then that's when I got the opportunity to apply to the Inn at Little Washington.
And we were fortunate enough to have dinner with Patrick a couple of nights ago, Scott and I were, and he talked about the application process for the Inn at Little Washington. It seems like it's pretty rigorous.
It was indeed. I was very nervous. Yeah, there were a few phone interviews, in-person interview, and then you do a stage, is what they call a kitchen working interview.
He was telling me that you guys have to produce a perfect French omelet. Did you have to do that?
Boy, wow. Yeah, no, I did not, because I was applying strictly for the pastry department, but I have witnessed many applicants. Yes.
Have you witnessed some success and some failures?
Both. Yes, both and whole spectrum.
What was your big test?
You know, at that time, so this was, I guess, 2011 or 12. And the pastry chef at the time was this woman named Mia Ponce. She was wonderful. I really loved working for her. We didn't, she did not have a test for us quite like that. So I simply spent a day with her in the kitchen and her pastry cooks. I do remember having to plate a couple desserts for actual guests, which was, I think, the first time I'd ever done that. So that was nerve-wracking. So maybe that was my test. But
so I'm going to let you brag on yourself for a second. Hopefully you'll take the opportunity to do so. What do you think it was about you that got you the job with all these applicants in such a rigorous process?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, the funny thing is that I didn't get that job immediately. Mia had two applicants for the position and decided to go with the other gal. I think a lot of it was because I was so green. I'd never stepped foot in an actual functioning kitchen or, you know, a business kitchen. But we did hit it off really well. Mia and I had similar views on flavor and food sourcing, and just really had great conversation. So a couple of months after I didn't get the job, she called me up. I think it was actually Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve that she called and said, I have another opening. Would you like that? So,
Merry Christmas.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a nice surprise. But yeah, so I guess, you know, it was really just having that personal connection with Mia. So I was extremely grateful to her.
How long were you in the kitchen at the Inn at Little Washington?
I was there a little over 4 years.
And what is it like day to day being in that kitchen? Like, I mean, are you guys, I know it's long hours, so that's a given, but are you doing the same thing repetitively? Things change? Like, what does it look like? Because I've talked to someone who's been on the different side of the kitchen, but never from a pastry standpoint.
Right. Pastry is a little bit, I would say, a little more fluid or varying than the savory side, only because the pastry department was baking for the gift shop. It was baking the cookie boxes for the favor, you know, the little cute in boxes, doing things for the room service. And then they're often, you know, very often VIPs in the kitchen, and dessert was one of chefs' go-tos to make them feel welcome and special and, you know, change up their dinner. Because he never liked for people to, you know, eat the same thing every single time they came. He liked to surprise them. So dessert was often one of those ways that he would do that. So, you know, even when you thought you were walking into a day of, okay, I know what my list is, usually there was something like, you know, so-and-so is dining this evening, Rachel, can you put up this? So I really love that part of it. I think that that's what sort of fed a lot of parts of me that love to, you know, I've never been a bread baker or a chocolatier or pastry person. I've always liked a little bit of everything. So that really indulged that side of me.
You know, we're a lot in common, Rachel. I like to eat a little bit of everything. So that's, I think we can hit it off pretty well. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. We make a great team, yeah. You and me.
Excellent.
And I was expecting Scott's question of who have you fed? He likes a good celebrity VIP. Who have you, you know, given a pastry to? I can't believe that wasn't what you was next, Scott.
You know what? I have found these bakers and these chefs, they don't like to spill the secrets. They like to keep them close to the vest. Right. So if you have a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear it. But if past is prologue, you're going to say, oh, yeah, we've fed some famous people, but I'm not going to tell you about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, then there's pretty much always somebody there that's of note, which is a really special experience. And what I loved about it, too, was just how close it was to Washington, D.C. So it's not necessarily the celebrities that maybe you see in the tabloids, but right. Other sorts. I do remember someone in the Treasury used to come and tip a lot of the kitchen workers with $2 bills. So that was funny.
That is fun.
So transitioning a little bit.
At the Virginia Museum of History and Culture, there's a traveling exhibit being featured for the next few months about Julia Child. Julia Child obviously inspired a whole generation, multiple generations of cooks and chefs and bakers. What role did Julia Child play in your life?
You know, back to my mom and my earlier baking days, she loved to watch Julia Jock on PBS. So that was almost always on some sort of PBS publication. But Julia Child was always one of my favorites to watch. And, you know, her books, some copies that were my grandmother's, some that were my mom. Those were the first things when I took an interest in cooking that they were giving to me for my birthday, whatnot. I was reading her biographies all the time. And I that's where my initial love or interest in came from, of just eating up whatever she had to say about it. I think both Julia Child and Chef Patrick at the Inn really embrace whimsy in a number of ways and kind of turn maybe some of those opportunities into an opportunity for creativity. So I really appreciated that too.
Scott and I both are housed in Richmond most of the time. And in reading through some of the stuff that you do over at the bakery, which, when did that open, the bakery that you currently, your bakery, right? Like the one that you currently own.
Right. So the bakery retail operation that's open today, that started November 2021. I started the brand sort of in the middle of COVID within another kitchen at a coffee shop, but the Cucurashu that you can visit today since 2021.
What's the story of the behind the name of the bakery?
So cuckoo is kind of a familial, friendly way to say hello. I think it's become more and more popular in the last decade or two in France. But so that's like, you know, all of my chefs along the way enter room cuckoo, or, you know, if you're just saying a quick hello. I always love the expression. And then Rashu is kind of the nickname for Rachel. So it would be the equivalent of Rach. And although a number of my chefs throughout the years called me Rashu, particularly the last chef that I was working for in Los Angeles, Ludo Lefebvre, he almost always called me Rashu. So it just sort of was in my mind a lot. And when I was thinking of what to call the bakery, my sister and I sat down for a brainstorming session and it sort of appeared. It was like, well, that's perfect.
We had Bertrand from a different restaurant in Northern Virginia on. He's originally from France, and he discussed the use of local ingredients and how big it is in French cuisine. You utilize an insane amount of local in your baking, a lot from Richmond, where Scott and I said, like after a little coffee you have, you use agroberry. I noticed that you you just are really involved. Did you start when you started baking with the first place, like thinking that's what you wanted to do, or did your travels to cooking school start to push that as more, I guess, prominent in your baking for you?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I think when you start cooking, I was definitely enamored with high quality ingredients. So like chocolate from France and Belgium and vanilla beans from Madagascar and pistachios from Sicily. You know, you kind of are like looking worldly for flavors, things that you can't really get in a little town like Charlottesville. But in reality, my mother and grandmother both were very health focused and had incredible gardens, both have wonderful green thumbs. The local and fresh and organic, like that was always around, but because we just never really talked about it, I think I took it for granted for a while. And it did take until I was, you know, working in kitchen and in France and going to the markets and whatnot, that sort of started connecting with me going, oh, of course. No, it tastes absolutely better when it's grown in the backyard or down the road than if you're sourcing from elsewhere.
So when I walk in the bakery, what kind of vibe are you trying to project? What are the feelings you're trying to give your customers when they walk in?
Gosh. Well, one of my favorite compliments I ever received about Grosso is that someone said when they were waiting for their pastry box, it felt like they were waiting in my living room. And I just really love the idea of people feeling comfortable, familial, welcome. You know, it just, I think it's the bright and cheery in there. Generally, the atmosphere that we have fun baking. I think, you know, we often hear the comment of, it looks like you guys are having a blast. And so, yeah, I think homey, if that's not too on the nose.
What are you known for?
Oh, wait. Well, certainly traditional French pastry is how we would describe Cuckoo's offerings. I, you know, there's a little bit of influence from the South or just from different areas of my travel, but I'd say our best sellers are our plain and chocolate croissant, the almond croissant, and our cannelé. So all four of those are extremely traditional.
How early do you have to get up to make all of these things? Let's just be frank with everybody that you're up at like, what, 2:30 in the morning?
Well, I'm a bit spoiled. I am at the bakery at 4 a.m. every day. I'm spoiled in terms of the baker. Like,
so it's funny you say that awesome. Because Roby comes home from the bars at 4 a.m. and you're getting up at the bakery at 4 a.m. So you guys, yeah, simpatico.
It's really interesting. I'm actually a very early riser, like very, not 4 a.m. I love a morning time. I think it's great. And what do you start with first? Like when you get into the bakery, like what is the first thing that you do? I mean, lights on, probably brew coffee, but like after that, like what's your next thing?
Yeah. Yeah. So light, ovens, all the, you know, sinks filled. Then we are really just throwing everything in the oven. So croissants, ours are mostly sourdough. So they're proofing overnight and they're ready to go right when we walk in. So those get egg washed, thrown in the oven. muffins, cookies, et cetera, those are in the other ovens. It starts with a bang. So
It sounds so good. I want to live in a French bakery, Roby. Can you make that happen somehow?
I tell you what, Scott, you want to live in this French bakery. I seriously have had a text message exchange with Eileen about how she would, we'd both be, you'd have to roll me places because I would just eat so much of this stuff. And I do not know how you have any restraint. I really have no idea how you guys are around it all day and just have any restraint at all. The product would be gone if I was any good at baking. Any good. So thank you for your time today. We're excited to get the opportunity to chat with you. If you could talk about one thing that you remember about Julia Child and the memoirs that you read that you carry with you right now, that'd be amazing.
Oh, boy.
I know, put you on the spot, so you can think about it.
No, it's an excellent question. I know, I wish this is where that 4 a.m. brain sometimes isn't as eloquent as I'd like it to be.
Sure.
No, I suppose what springs to mind is that she was such a relational person, too. So her husband, her friends, the people that she did her cooking school with, were such a huge part of her story. And she, interwove those, was always accommodating, always collaborating. It was all about creativity and good food. And I think that those sorts of, that energy was always very inspiring to me.
Awesome. Well, you're listening to Eat It, Virginia with Rachel, Roby, and Scott.
This episode of Eat It, Virginia. Eat It, Virginia? This episode of Eat It, Virginia. No! Oh, God, no.
Before social media influencers or the Food Network, there was a national icon who changed the way we cook at home. Julia Child, America's original celebrity chef. Learn how she inspired generations of foodies and home cooks in a limited-time major national exhibition at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture. Julia Child, A Recipe for Life. On display March 16th through September 2nd at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture in Richmond. Learn more and get tickets at virginiahistory.org. virginiahistory.org.